Welcome to our show. I'm fine. It's a podcast about mental health and which stresses the importance of mental health, and it also helps in busting all the myths and misconceptions about each and every mental health struggle that we have these days. And if you're watching us on YouTube, welcome as well. This is going to be a YouTube series of 7 episodes, and this is our first episode. And to kick it off with, we have with us our lovely guest, Miss Alisha, who's a counseling psychologist from India. Alisha, I really wanted to thank you before starting the show, not just for coming to our show, but for starting an Instagram page where we can find proper good information about mental health, because I feel like there's a lot of misconceptions and false advice going around on Instagram and other social media platforms where people who are not qualified to give that advice. So thank you so much. It's so nice of you to start an Instagram page for us. And I also heard about Empathy Club, so it's really nice that you've started something where the professionals have reached out as well, because I've done psychology as an undergrad student, and I've always wondered where I'll turn to if I end up practicing and if I get overwhelmed by everything. And it's really nice that you've come up with that initiative. And happy new year to you, and happy new year to everyone watching. And I hope it's not too late to wish you all. It's the first time I'm meeting everyone like after 2023. So happy new year. Are you still sticking to your new year resolution? I'm not sticking to mine. And what would you give an advice to someone like me who's not able to stick to new year's resolution? Is there any reason behind why we're not able to like stick to it? Most people don't.
Right. So one of the reasons that, New Year resolutions don't work is because, every year on the 1st of January, on the 31st of December of the last day of the year, we make up these really insane goals, right? But the thing is, with insane resolutions or like really over the top resolutions, is that big goals take a lot of time. So if you're breaking those goals down to very smaller achievable goals, for example, if you decided to lose 30 kilos, right? It's just an example. I'm not, body shaming anybody. Just saying it's an example. If you decide to lose 30 kilos, instead of having that big goal of 30, why don't you just make a small goal of, okay, I'll lose 1 kilo this month. That's it, and then repeat that goal again and again and again. Those smaller goals, when we achieve them, feel so much better than just achieving that one big goal. And because, reaching that one big goal, take smaller steps, 1 kilo every month or 2 kilos every month, and eventually you'll get there. Maybe not in the timeline you expected to get there, and life rarely happens in our own timeline, right? But smaller goals help you set up better and help you deal with your expectations much better than big goals.
Okay, thank you for that lovely advice. I think I will take that as well. My goal was to eat healthy and work out every day, which I'm not really sticking to. So I think I'll have weekly goals and try to achieve them. So thank you so much for that. Let's jump into today's topic, which is Mythbusters. It's about the common misconceptions that go around mental health. So Alisha, I'll start off by asking some questions that I've collected, which are the common myths in India. I'll pose as the one believing in such myths, and you can tell me why it's wrong. So the first question is, mental health issues are a sign of personal weakness, and it's not something to be proud of. So what do you think about that?
Okay, so this misconception that it's a weakness or something that it's not supposed to be proud of, or even you're not supposed to be talking about these things. They are all a byproduct of the thinking that you can do it by yourself, and you have got to achieve everything in your life by yourself, and God forbid life happens, right? Meet with a trauma, you lose a loved one, or in your personal life only, you experience a lot of bullying in your childhood or something like that happened, right? It is going to have an impact on your psyche. It is going to have an impact on your mind and the way your behavior is and how your personality forms over time. So when we say it's a weakness, it's really our how we survived, It's really, I would say when somebody with mental health issues comes to me, the first thing that I tell that person is, you survived all of that. You're a damn survivor, you did your best. And yes, you picked up some bad coping mechanisms. You picked up some unhealthy skills also, like alcoholism or anything like that. But it's okay. It's all right. You did what you could at that point to cope. Now you've come to the point where you want to resolve all that or, move on to a better lifestyle. So now it's time to start talking about those issues. And that's why I am so, before I was even a counseling psychologist, I had this page and I was running it as a mental health advocate, right? Because I wanted to speak on those things. I wanted people to be okay with not being okay in general, right?
Yeah, because, and being okay with talking about these, because why should there be so much silence?
Yeah, that was my first video. I don't know if you've ever seen it. So how I started this page was I came up with a concept called Psychology Sundays, and I posted a video every Sunday talking about mental health or one mental health illness, and, you know, just to make everybody like acquainted and comfortable with talking about it. And the first thing that I said in that video was, agar hamari body mein koi problem hoti hai, you know, if we have an issue with any other body part in our entire body, our heart, lungs, stomach, anything, we are so proud, like, okay, you know, I'm having this issue, and we talk, like, you know, anything, like, it's
fine, it's chill. Comfortable talking about it.
Exactly. But as soon as mental health comes in, everybody's quiet. The silence is so loud, you can hear it. Oh, yeah. You're depressed.
And the families especially, they expect to, like, not keep that in public view and, like, ask them to keep quiet about it. So yeah, it is something that should be talked about. Yeah. But having said that, I quickly wanted to segue into something else because it got me thinking. In January, we also end up doing Dry January. Do you think that's a good idea? I mean, would people experience like withdrawal? Is it always better to do Dry January with support from a therapist?
See, Dry January can mean two things. If you are drinking to the point where you feel like, okay, 1 month of the entire year, I'm not going to be drinking, that's my Dry January, right? If that feels like, a fresh start to you, because, you know, that's how you want to start your year, and that's great, good for you. But if you're just doing it for the sake of doing it for just 1 month, and then you're going to fall into the same pattern in February, March, April, and so on, then, you know, how are you changing anything? Like, it's just 1 month out of the 12 months.
It takes away the point of it as well.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. The second misconception is that mental health treatment is only for individuals with serious long-term mental illnesses. So what is your take on that?
Well, my take would be that no, mental health treatment or mental health services in general are not for just those people who have a long history of mental illnesses, or even like have generational trauma because of their family and, you know, their parent having depression or their parent having PTSD. It is so much more at this point. It's to the point, okay, let's just talk about generational trauma, right? Okay, your father had depression. How did that impact you and your life? How does that trauma fall into your life, shape your personality? And how do you understand things from their point of view? Because our first school are our parents. They teach us everything, that they're our first world, right? So we pick up so much just from starting over there. Exactly. We don't, because we're children, right? We don't know that we're directly learning from the first world that we have, who are our parents. And moving on from there, you pick up things, you pick up personalities. So, for example, a person who has a depressed parent, they think that not talking about it, being sad, being isolated, just in general, not having a great sleep pattern or overeating or eating less than usual, it's okay. Trust me, I've had clients who come up to me, they're like, is this not normal? Like, not really. Not really, you know? So you don't have to have a mental illness just to get into therapy. It can be as simple as body image issues, or, you know, self-development, self-esteem issues, confidence, literally smaller things that lead up to your personality at the end.
And overall,
they can also be worked upon. Yeah. Anxiety is the most common of all, right?
Yeah.
The most common. I have clients who are literally just working on the fact that they have anxiety and how to deal with it. Not even generalized anxiety disorder, just anxiety. So, yeah, come into therapy if you feel like, you know, your life isn't going the way you want it to be. You're having more issues. You have trouble sleeping. You're angry a lot more. You're isolated. You feel very lonely. Anything that you can think of is not going the right way. Come to therapy. It's okay. There's no shame in it.
I know. It's for overall development as well, and not just, you know, for serious illnesses. Mental health problems can simply be cured by positive thinking and being all positively affirmated by everybody.
If I had a dollar for every I heard a top-notch influencer say, oh, are you depressed? Think positive. Like, right. Why are we doing these degrees?
Where's the switch? We can just turn it off for that.
Yeah, why are we even going through the trainings and these degrees, and why are we becoming a psychologist if we can just think positive and everything will be fine, right? See, you go ask a depressed person to think positive. What do you think they'll say to you?
They'd probably be like, I'm trying. That'll be the honest, genuine answer.
Exactly. Because it is so much more than just being positive, right? It is changing thought patterns, because it's not just that, okay, I was negative and now I'm positive, so my life is great. The whole journey from that negative point of view to even considering the joy of having a positive point of view is scary for a lot of people. Because if you've lived in that sadness for so long, it becomes your comfort.
It becomes comfortable, yeah.
Depression becomes comfortable for a lot of people because that's all they know. And when a little spark of joy comes in their life, a little happiness comes their way, they get scared. They back off. They're like, no, this is not what I'm used to. So I'm going to destroy it. So, those sabotaging behaviors start happening. So while sure, a positive thinking and mindset is something that we do focus on in therapy, it's not all we focus on. There's a lot more behind
it. It's a process, right? It doesn't happen overnight. So people
Absolutely.
Can't be just told that.
No, nothing. Therapy is slow. It's non-linear. The healing is non-linear, but it happens. I've changed like a lot of lives with my clients. They have genuinely seen happiness in their life. And I'm very proud for all the clients that I've gone by and the clients that are currently working with me. But it is a process, and it's a slow process at that.
Yeah. And it's very motivating to hear that there is hope and there is possibility. A lot of people have changed and recovered as well. I also came up on the statistics where in India, a lot of people are depressed and are going through anxiety these days because it's very common, but a lot of people are also beginning to take help and there's a good recovery rate as well, which is extremely, extremely motivating to come across. The next myth is therapy is expensive and the psychiatry, especially taking pills, is something that will get someone dependent on the pills and they can never be weaned off.
So my take on this is very personal, I would say. But as a professional also, what people do is when they experience anxiety or like really bad anxiety, right? Some people experience panic attacks and, one of the main symptoms of panic attacks is the heart rate really goes through the roof and people feel like they're dying. That is one of the shining symptom of panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is when that particular thing goes down, people get scared, right? Obviously, like it has never happened with you before and you had this really weird thing happen to you, all because you were stressed for maybe a long time. You felt anxious, but not that much that you would do anything about it. Then you had a panic attack. What happened? So what do? They go to a psychiatrist straight, which is not ideal. If you are having anxiety for a long time and then you faced panic attack, by taking medication, yes, you are going to get relief right away. But the thing is, that relief is only dependent on the fact kab tak dawaiyan chal rahi hain. Because we're not solving it from the root. As simple as that. When you take a painkiller, right? What happens? It numbs the pain down, but aapko pata hai, tomorrow morning I'm going to have to take it again so that I can manage that pain, right? So those pills are basically for managing the symptoms. And that's why I tell all my clients that if you need medication, you need to have therapy hand in hand. So
yeah.
That once you are coming off the pills, you don't face the whole, okay, I'm just falling. This is not a good idea. I'm going to go back on pills again. Because without therapy, you're just managing. You're taking it up a level. But the root level, that is therapy. Medication is just managing. So
it
can go hand in hand.
Complementary and hand in hand.
Yeah.
Okay. So those were the common myths that I found in India. But I also found this other problem, which is generational for our Gen Z people. Now that we have social media, a good thing is that a lot of people are able to find ways to be a little bit more open about mental health by seeing other good advocates for it. But one problem that's stemming from this is that a lot of people start to use this term very loosely. People who don't have anxiety. If they just feel a little stressed about an exam, they're like, oh my God, I'm so anxious. It's become so common for people to use these terms so lightly. Do you think that kind of takes away from the core of the issue? Because it's much more than just feeling stressed for an exam. And depression is much more than just feeling, sad one day because somebody didn't talk to you and things like that. But people go around romanticizing little things and trivializing the actual issue. And people who are actually struggling, they find that even tougher now to open up sometimes, because it's like everybody who just, you know, feels sad goes around saying they're depressed. So people who are actually, who have been depressed for a while, and people who are, you know, maybe on the brinks of the highest end of depression, are like staying even more isolated. So what's one advice you would give to people who are dealing with somebody who's going through a crisis and who's not a professional? What's the best thing to tell them? With all this misinformation around, I think it would have gotten into their psyche as well.
So first thing I would say is that I agree with you. You know, if you just have stress, don't call it I'm super anxious or I'm super this or that. If you just like cleaning in general, don't call yourself, I have OCD. I'm a neat freak. I have OCD. If you like cleaning, then say you're a neat freak, or say that, you know, you just like, in general, you like clean places, or, you know, you are very hygienic. That's okay. But if you call it OCD, then there's a lot more involved, because OCD is all like, if I don't say it this many times, my family's going to die. Something's really bad going to happen. Like, it's that level of scariness, or, you know, just like in general, the anxiety that's happening. That is like extreme, right? So don't call yourself OCD, depressed, just because you felt sad, or just because, you know, you are cleaning or something like that. So we all have got to correct ourselves also, because what I've seen is, even in our profession, I would be very honest, I see a lot of people still calling themselves, I just in general, like, feel depressed right now. Like, right now?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense, you know. Either you have been, or, you know, right now doesn't make sense. You feel sad makes sense. So in general, all of us have got to correct ourselves and catch ourselves when we do it. And it's okay, we're all human beings. We've gotten into the habit of going to the extremes and calling ourselves extreme things, like, okay, I'm so goddamn toxic, you know, I did this thing. Try to, you know, tone it down. We all exaggerate, it's okay. Admit it, and, you know, come back to the ground and just be like, oh, I did this thing that wasn't really amazing, but, you know, I'm working on it. You can say that as well, right? So coming to the second question, which was like, what advice can I give as a professional to people or their families in general, if somebody in their family is suffering from a mental illness, right? Number one, remember, they might not always come up to you. They might not always open up. But they are always looking for a safe space just to be there, even if they're not ready to talk, which in most cases they aren't, right? Try to be their safe space. Just let them know that, hey, I'm here for you if you need me to be. And, you know, I'm just a text away, or I'm just a call away. So let me know, you know, we can always have a chat. Even that small gesture of somebody telling them that, you know, she was there, they remember it. And they, like, you know, hold it very close to their heart, even if they would never take them up on it, but they remember it. Second, this is just a very wide use example, I would say, if they're having a panic attack, you know, this is a real life situation, sit with them and breathe with them. This is a great way to stimulate their nervous system, because when a panic attack happens, the entire nervous system just shoots up and it's going haywire. It needs to regulate, it needs to soothe. Right. So, you know, you can do like belly breathing together, or you can just like put your hand on their chest and just like, you know, follow the way that I breathe. Calm down. It's all right. You'll get through this. Don't be like, oh, stop it. You're over exaggerating. What are you doing?
So get over it. And things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. You have got to accept that this is something that is happening right now. And I can help them if I just tell them, breathe. You'll get through this. You'll get through this. Because all they need is hope that I will get through this. Because the fact that it's not ending, or it's like prolonged, scares the hell out of them. And the only thing that you can do for them is let them know it's going to be okay. Just breathe it out. Just breathe it out. I'm here. I'm on the call, or I'm in front of you. Let's go out for a drive. Anything. That's all we can do.
Yeah, that makes sense as well. And like you said, I think even I catch myself sometimes, I do have depression. So I catch myself sometimes saying for like normal things that, oh yeah, I'm depressed today. And then I realize, no, wait, I'm not depressed today. I'm just feeling sad about something. So it's something I guess all of us should work on, not, you know, trivializing something that's really tough. Okay, having said that, I wanted to jump into it. Now we spoke about Gen Z. I wanted to ask about what it is for kids and adolescents, because like you said, when we spoke about some time back, parents are like our first reference group to, like, you know what's right and what's wrong, and what is normal and what is not, in fact. And when they have such misconceptions posted on them, stuff like generational trauma, which you talked about, for example, I think that combined with all this misinformation that's flailing around the internet and among their peers, I think everything kind of makes one believe some certain things about mental health. So how can we make someone feel that it's okay to reach out for help? Because before even society and family and all the other myth holders tell them not to do it, they themselves would have developed a certain inhibition towards seeking help. So how would you define mental health to start it off with?
Okay, you asked me like three questions in the span of a minute. All right. I think I'm going to start with how would I define mental health in the first place, right? Mental health for me is the fact that I don't attach myself to people's opinions of me and how they would react to what I am doing, right? And I am okay with the fact that if people aren't okay with me in general, you know, I'm not saying that, okay, you know, cut off people if they're not the best people in your life. See, everybody has some or the other thing. You know, we're not perfect. We're not the most amazing humans. Like, it's okay to have some issues. And, you know, everybody's dealing with something or the else. But to me, mental health is being able to stay within myself and be grounded all the while protecting my peace, you know. So that is something that I constantly work on, and it can be in form of therapy. I take my own therapy when I need it. I have my own therapist. I'm very proud of that fact. Second is practicing gratitude. It's something that has helped me so much and has made me see so many other perspective in life and just in general be more happy. Lastly, self-care is something that I have my priority on, and something my clients can also attest to, the fact that we talk so much about self-care. And that is, it can be in any form. It can be painting, dancing, or anything that gives you joy. That's self-care, right? So taking long baths, or, you know, aromatherapy, candles, whatever. Mine is gym. I go to the gym. I spend like 1.5 hours over there. I can be so exhausted. But when I land in the gym and I come back home, there's a smile on my face. So, you know, I know that I've done something for myself. So every day you're supposed to be doing something for yourself. So, you know, life is worth living. It's good. It's happy. So, yeah, I would a very vague definition. But yeah, I think that's what would mental health mean for me. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Like being comfortable with who you are and coming to a good space in self-growth and self-development in a positive way, and staying with our self-care routines and, you know, all our positive, healthy coping mechanisms defines good mental well-being. Mm-hmm. And that makes a lot of sense. And that's something that we should all constantly work on as well. And what is an immediate self-care that or crisis help someone can give someone who is, you know, a kid or somebody who's suddenly having a mental health crisis, somebody if they're, you know, like if they're not ready to go into therapy? So how can we tell them that it's okay to, you know, seek help?
Yeah. So the best thing that you can do is share your own struggles with them. Mm-hmm. You know, when they share, or, you know, show something to you and are vulnerable to you, tell them what you feel. And if you've been in therapy, let them know that how therapy is helping you. That is one of the best things that you can do for somebody who is not exactly ready for therapy. You know, you can tell them, okay, see, I took therapy. This is how it helped me. And I understand maybe our issues aren't the same. And I know that it hurts you. And I know you're in pain. But this can help you. And this is how it helped me. And if you've not been in therapy ever, I would say that just in general, if they're being vulnerable to you, be vulnerable to them. Let them know that they're not alone. You know, that's the best thing that you can do for them, because the feeling of being alone can really eat them up. So that's the best we can do for them.
Yeah, that really makes a lot of sense, because it's very, very isolating sometimes. Thank you so much for sharing a lot of insights with us today, because that brought us to the very last question. I really want to thank you so much for your time today and for telling us and talking to us about all the different myths and possible, you know, cobwebs that keep people, you know, stuck in a space where they can't reach out and take help. It's not necessarily someone's fault sometimes. We can't just blame society either. We have to actively take steps to come out of it. And I'm glad that we both got to, you know, speak about it today and put a small stone into building a better foundation for everyone. And before we part, is there any last advice you want to leave all of us, and me included, with?
Okay, any last advice that I would want to leave with? The last thing that I would want to leave with is that A, you are not alone. If you are listening to this and if you feel like you're struggling with something, you are not alone. There are literally thousands of people like you who are struggling with almost the similar issues that you are struggling with right now. So please don't think that you're alone in this. There are therapy groups, there are support groups that you can reach out to. I am definitely working on starting a few as well. And like in the beginning, you mentioned the empathy club, that's for therapists. So I'm working on starting support groups for depression, anxiety, and I'm doing a lot right now. So, you know, just like in general. Second, if you feel that whatever issues you're dealing with is really complicating your life at this point, you can't sleep, you can't eat properly, you have issues all the time, you feel paranoid because of all of this, it's time to speak up. You know, it's time to get to somebody, take professional help. And don't worry, therapists, they don't judge you. It's going to be a safe space. There's no sort of condescending thing happening, you know, and if that happens with a therapist, get out of there. You know, that is not a good therapist. And, you know, not every one of us is trained the same way. So get out of that space, find another therapist, somebody that you connect to, because you'll know when that connection happens. Like it will click instantly. So it's okay. Take your time, find that therapist if you want to speak about it. And while you're not, if you don't want to speak about it and you want to keep it to yourself for a while, try journaling. It can really help take off the edge. It can really help with you. Yeah, that's it. And you know,
I love journaling as well. It's a really lovely way to process our emotions. And also therapy, I think not a lot of people are aware about this in India, that it's confidential. Things that are said doesn't really get out of there. So yeah, I really hope that more people get to reach out, just like how you said, instead of struggling in silence. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you so much, you guys, for being with us thus far and traveling this journey and maybe hopefully opening up your minds a little bit more too, in case you had any inhibitions around therapy. See you guys in the next episode, which is going to be about depression. And hope we can travel through each and every struggle together and speak about it and learn and grow. Thank you and bye.